Chapter 13. Out of Time. The journey between dimensions was more violent than Artemis remembered. There was no time to reflect on various scenery changes, and barely time for his senses to register sights, sounds, or temperature changes. They were ripped from their own dimension and dragged through wormholes of space and time with only their consciousnesses intact. Only once did they materialize for the briefest second. The landscape was grey, bleak and pockmarked, and in the distance Artemis could see a blue planet camouflaged by cloud cover. "I'm on the moon," thought Artemis. Then they were gone again, drawn by the lure of Hybris. It was an unnatural feeling, this out-of-body, out-of-mind travel. "How am I still aware?" thought Artemis. "How is any of this possible?" And stranger still, when he concentrated, Artemis could feel the thoughts of the others swirling round him. It was mostly broad emotions, such as fear or excitement. But after a bit of mental twiddling, Artemis detected specific thoughts too. There was Holly, wondering if her weapon would arrive intact. Typical soldier. And there was Number One, fretting incessantly, not about the journey itself, but about someone who would be waiting for him in Hybris. Abbott. A demon named Abbott. Artemis reached out and found Quan floating in the ether. His mind was formidable, juggling complex computations and philosophical puzzles.
"You are keeping the mind active, young human."
Artemis's consciousness realized that this thought was directed at him. The warlock had felt his clumsy probe. Artemis could feel a difference between his mind and the others. They had something different. An alien energy. It was difficult to explain a feeling without senses. But for some reason, it seemed to be blue. A blue plasma, electric and alive. Artemis allowed this rich feeling to flow through his mind and was instantly jolted by its energy.
Magic, he realized. Magic is in the mind.
Now this was something worth knowing. Artemis retreated to his own mind space, but he took a sample of the blue plasma with him. You never know when a touch of magic would come in useful. They materialized on Hybris, inside the crater itself. Their arrival was accompanied by a flash of displaced energy. The group lay on the soot-blackened slopes, panting and steaming. The ground beneath them was warm to the touch, and the acrid stink of sulfur stung their nostrils. The euphoria of materialization soon dissipated. Artemis breathed experimentally, the air from his mouth blowing up small dust eddies. Volcanic gas made his eyes water, and flat flakes of ash instantly coated every exposed patch of skin.
"This could be hell," he commented.
"Hell or Hybris," said Number One, climbing to his knees. "I got some of this ash on a tunic before. It never comes out."
Holly was up too, running a systems check on her equipment.
"My neutrino is fine, but I can't get a lock on a communication signal. We're on our own. And I seem to have lost the bomb."
Artemis knelt, his knees cracking through the ash crust, releasing the heat below. He glanced at his watch and caught sight of his own face. His hair was grey with ash, and for a second he thought he was looking at his father. A thought struck him.
"I look like my father. A father I may never see again. Mother. Butler. I have only one friend left."
"Holly," he said. "Let me look at you."
Holly did not look up from her wrist computer. Generally, she would use the helmet visor readouts, but she was still shaky after the dimension hopping, and the twin focus needed for visor reading could make a fairy nauseous at the best of times.
"No time right now, Artemis."
Artemis padded across to her, walking gingerly on the thin crust.
"Holly, let me look at you,"
he said again, holding her shoulders. Something in Artemis's voice made Holly stop what she was doing and pay attention. This was not a tone Artemis Fowl used very often. It could almost class as tenderness.
"I just need to make sure you're still you. Things get mixed up between dimensions. On my last trip, I switched fingers."
He held up his hand for her to see.
"Strange, I know, but you seem to be fine, all present and correct."
Something flashed in the corner of Artemis's eye. There was a metal case, half buried in the ash further up the crater wall.
"The bomb,"
sighed Artemis.
"I thought we'd lost it in transit. There was a flash when we landed."
Quan hurried across to the bomb.
"No, that was energy displacement, mostly mine. Magic is almost another being. It flows where it will. Some of mine did not flow back to me in time and ignited on re-entry. I am happy to say that the rest of my power is fired up and ready to go.
Artemis was struck by how much of this prehistoric being's language was similar to NASA jargon. No wonder we don't have a chance against the fairies, he thought. They were solving dimensional equations when we were still knocking stones together. Artemis helped the warlock to heave the bomb from the ash's grip. The timer had been knocked for 6 by the time jump, and now read over 5,000 hours. Finally, a stroke of luck. Artemis used Butler's picks to examine the bomb's workings. Maybe he could disarm it if he had a few months, a couple of computers and some laser tools. Without those things, there was about as much chance of him disarming this weapon as there was of a squirrel making a paper aeroplane. "This bomb is perfectly operational," he said to Quan. "Only the timer was affected." The warlock stroked his beard.
"That makes sense. That instrument is relatively simple compared to the complexity of our bodies. The dimension tunnel would have no trouble reassembling it. The timer is another matter. It will be affected by any time flares we run across here. It could blow at any second, or never."
"Not never," thought Artemis. "I may not be able to disarm this thing, but I can certainly blow it when I need to."
Holly peered at the deadly device. "Is there any way we can dispose of it?" Quan shook his head.
"Inanimate objects cannot travel unaccompanied in the time tunnel. We, on the other hand, could get sucked back in at any moment. We need to get some silver on us immediately."
Holly glanced at Artemis. "Maybe some of us want to get sucked back in."
"Maybe you do," said Quan, "but under certain conditions. If you just let yourselves go, who knows where you'll end up, or when. Your natural space and time will attract you, but with a spell deteriorating, you could arrive encased in rock a mile below the surface, or stranded on the moon."
This was a sobering thought. It was one thing to have a quick tourist's look at the surface of the moon. It was quite another to be stuck there forever. Not that you would know anything about it after the first minute.
"So, we're stuck here," said Holly. "Come on, Artemis. You have a plan? You always have a plan."
The others gathered round Artemis. There was something about him that made people assume that he was the leader. Perhaps it was the way he assumed it himself. Also, in this instant, he was the tallest person in the group. He smiled briefly.
"So, this is how Butler feels all the time."
"We all have our reasons for wanting to go back," he began. "Holly and I have left loved ones behind. Friends and family we would dearly love to see again. Number One and Quan, you need to get your people out of this dimension. The spell is unravelling, and soon nowhere on this island will be safe. If my calculations are correct, and I feel certain that they are, then not even silver can anchor you here for much longer. Now, you can go when the spell dictates, or we can decide when to make the jump." Quan did the sums in his head.
"Not possible. It took 7 warlocks and a volcano to move the island here. To get us back, I would need 7 magical beings, warlocks preferably. And, of course, a live volcano, which we don't have."
"Does it have to be a volcano? Wouldn't any energy source do?"
"Theoretically," agreed Quan. "So, you're saying we could use the bomb?"
"It's possible."
"Highly unlikely, but possible. I still need 7 magical beings."
"But the spell is already cast," argued Artemis. "The infrastructure is there. Couldn't you do it with fewer?"
Quan wagged a finger at Artemis.
"You are a smart mud boy. Yes, maybe I could do it with fewer. Of course, we would not know until we arrived."
"How many?"
5. 5 at the absolute least."
Holly ground her teeth.
"We only have 3, and Number One's a novice, so we need to find 2 demons with magic on this island."
"Impossible," snapped Quan. "Once an imp warps, that's the end of any magic they might have. Only warlocks like myself and Number One do not warp, so we keep our magic."
Artemis brushed ash from his jacket.
"Our first priority is to get out of this crater and find some silver. I suggest we leave the bomb here. The temperature's not enough to ignite it, and if it does explode, the volcano will absorb some of the force. If we're going to find some other magical creature, we will undoubtedly have a better chance outside this crater. At any rate, the sulfur's giving me a headache."
Artemis did not wait for agreement. He turned and made for the crater lip. After a moment, the others followed, struggling with each footfall through the crust of ash. It reminded Artemis of a giant sand dune he'd trudged up with his father once. Here, falling would have harsher consequences. It was a difficult and treacherous hike. The ash concealed grooves in the rock and small crevices that vented warm air from the volcano. Colourful fungi grew in clusters around these vents, and they glowed in the crater shadows like coral nightlights. Nobody spoke much during the climb. Number One muttered his way through large tracts of the dictionary, but the others realised that this was his way of keeping his chin up. Artemis glanced upwards occasionally. The sky was dawn red and glowed above him like a lake of blood. That's a cheery metaphor, thought Artemis. Maybe it says something about my character that a lake of blood is the only image I can come up with. Number One's build was best suited for the steep climb. He had a low centre of gravity and could rest on his stumpy tail if need be. His thick feet anchored him securely, and armoured plates covering his body protected him from sparks or bruising in the event of a fall. Quan was clearly suffering. The old warlock had been a statue for the past 10,000 years, and was still working the kinks out of his bones. Magic soothed the process somewhat, but even magic could not completely erase the pain. He winced each time his foot punctured the soot crust. Finally, the group reached the summit. If time had passed, it was impossible to tell how much. The sky still had the same red tinge, and all timepieces had virtually stopped. Holly jogged the last few steps, then raised her right hand, fingers closed in a fist.
That means halt, Artemis told the others. It's a military thing. Human soldiers use the exact same sign.
Holly poked her head above the rim for a moment, then returned to the group.
What does it mean if there are a lot of demons on their way up the mountain?
Quan smiled.
It means our brother demons saw the flash of our arrival and are coming to greet us.
And what does it mean if they are all armed with crossbows?
Mused Quan. That could be a touch more serious.
How bad can they be? Asked Artemis. We faced trolls together.
It's fine, said Holly, powering up her handgun. They're not so big. We're going to be fine.
Really?
Artemis frowned. Holly only bothered reassuring him when they were in deep trouble.
That bad, he said.
Holly whistled, shaking her head.
You have no idea.